Morning, everybody. I understand this service is moving on at pace. I'll give you a chance to help me out with a little discussion in a minute. But first of all, just to introduce what we're doing, if you're a visitor or if you're a parent whose brain is so addled by trying to keep your children amused all holidays that you've forgotten what we're doing, we're in the middle of a series called Seasons, Preparing for Life's Transitions. And looking at how we can better understand those seasons, how we can better prepare for them, how can we better support one another in those seasons. And today, today we're looking at the season of midlife. Now, I know you are asking, why on earth would they give Erica this topic when she's not even reached middle age yet? But for some reason they did. Actually, I am middle-aged. I accept I'm middle-aged. I am happy to be middle-aged, actually, because that means I've still got quite a lot of life left. Anyway, but as soon as I started thinking about this, I had to answer a question, because I did turn 60 last Christmas. And the first question I had to ask was, am I actually still middle-aged? And if I'm not middle-aged, what am I? And so I went around and I asked quite a few people what middle age is in their point of view, from their point of view. It's not an easy question to answer. So this is where I want you to have a little think about this, please. I want you to turn to somebody near you or next to you and just have a think, just quick discussion. When does middle age begin? And when does middle age end? Try not to offend anybody irreconcilably. So just be careful what you say, but off you go. Have a little chat. What do you think? I call this meeting to order. Okay, guys, thank you. Obviously got some debate going. Right, let's have a show of hands then. Did anybody say middle age starts at 35? Oh, quite a few, I was going to say young hands going up, but you should know better over there. Anybody say 40-ish? No. 45? No. Anybody say 50? You're being optimistic about how long you're going to live, aren't you? Okay, anybody say, no, surely nobody said 55 for middle age, did they? 75 for middle age. Wow, go for it. Okay, I love it. I love the positivity. And what about when middle age ends? I hope nobody said 40. Anybody say 45? 50? Any advance on 50? 55. I feel like an auctioneer now. 55, thank you to the gentleman in the corner. 60? A number of people say 60. 65, anybody? Anybody going up to 70 with that? Oh, yes, some determined people. Now we're getting to some of the older people in the room, funnily enough, aren't we? Anybody would say more than 70? Oh, okay, great, okay. So, it's a bit of a tricky one, really. What are we talking about here? Well, when I looked around on the internet, some of the sort of researchers and, you know, academics who are out there, they're not quite sure either, but they roughly sort of are talking about starting middle age at about age 40 to 45, and finishing around the mid-60s, believe it or not, sort of retirement age. And I don't know what they call anybody straight after that. I'm going for mature adult. But I don't know if anybody would agree with me on that one. But quite a lot of people, when you ask them in surveys, they actually say, oh, it's not to do with a number, it's to do with your state of mind, a mental attitude. Oh, yes, lots of nods going on now. Okay, so I will suggest a few things in your mindset or in your behavior which might indicate that you are becoming middle-aged, okay? First of all, I know these are small, I'll read them out. First of all, you might just fancy taking a little nap before you go out in the evening, or when it's getting a bit hot, or when you've done some exercise, oh, you deserve a little rest. Or maybe just because, okay, that might mean you're getting a bit middle-aged. What about when your arms are too short to read the small print, and you're holding your book out there, and you've got your glasses on, but you're pushing them further and further down your nose, and they actually won't stay on your nose anymore because you can't get them down any further to make the print bigger. That might be an indication. What about you make that little grunting noise when you get up out of a low chair? You're like, ooh! That was a bit of an effort, wasn't it? Yeah. Or finally, you turn out the lights for economic rather than romantic reasons. That's my favourite. And of course, that's without mentioning the other bane of every middle-aged person's life, which is, on the one hand, unwanted hair, and on the other hand, not enough hair. You know, we all suffer in middle age from one of these two issues. And I came across this picture that I absolutely love that somebody posted. My dad sent me this to prove he has hair. If you can't tell what's going on there, he is balancing a bottle top on top of his tiny little hairs, and they're not touching his scalp. So in his mind, that proves he still has hair. Okay. So we know roughly what we're talking about. Okay. I did actually manage to grab a few unsuspecting victims, I mean willing volunteers, at the picnic last week, and I got Oscar to film them answering a few questions. I've got no idea what made the final cut, so thank you to everybody who was brave enough to go on camera. And we're going to see what people of Beck think about middle age now. Some people.
I don't know, in my mid-40s, I think I'm comfortable with saying that I'm in my middle age.
60?
40.
40 for you?
Late 30s.
Late 30s.
So like 45. 30.
30.
Very good.
You look Zion?
30.
30.
Yeah.
55 to 65.
55 to
the bracket,
65.
Yeah.
No.
You wouldn't.
No.
Oh, okay, so
I'm a bit younger than Andy.
Yeah, only a few. There's a few years in it.
No, I'm a spring chicken. Don't laugh.
And the real
yes,
answer.
Yes.
No, because I haven't grown up yet, and the kids are too small.
How old are your children?
2 and 5.
So that makes it impossible for you to be middle-aged.
Yeah, because that'd have to be boring.
I guess we possibly are. Well, we're no longer young-aged.
I don't know. I feel like middle age when I was growing up was more like 40s, and I'm not in my 40s, so I sort of feel like I'm beyond middle age, but I don't know. It maybe we should redefine it.
Yes, because it means I've managed to last that long, and no, because I probably will have more aches and pains than what I've got now. If you're more wise, you've got something to be able to teach and give to the youth of the day, and they can learn from your mistakes, and they can learn from your good times as well, and they can take that on and build on that for themselves.
After you've got a few years under your belt, you've got a few life scars, and I think you learn from those.
I think as well, it's probably a good time, yeah, your health, because if you have, then you haven't got little kids running around, you've got perhaps a bit more savings from a life of working, and you can go off and do things, and I think that's so it's quite freeing time, I think.
Less constrained, because we haven't got kids that are dependent on us.
No, it's going to be boring, because I'll have kids and they'll ruin all my money plans.
Very different, probably what I imagined. Probably the freedom, not being tied to young children, although older children have their challenges too, just saying. Being a grandma, definitely. I'm loving being a grandma to Jude. And just probably having the freedom that you don't have when you're tied to young children. You know, full-time job plays a bit of havoc with it sometimes.
I think it probably comes with a degree of being comfortable, I think, both financially and in terms of security. But maybe that's not always a good thing.
I think definitely. I'd say also being more comfortable in your own skin as well. I think you get to a point where I often look at people in their 20s now with all their insecurities and having to either chase career or chase partners or whatever. It just looks tiring, and I'm quite glad that I don't have to do that. That I'm relatively comfortable in my identity and who I am. And
because I don't want my body to hurt. Like, I,
I want to play sports all my life, you know.
Freedom, like you get to do whatever you want, sort of thing. You know, well, you work for the money so you can use it for whatever you want. I mean, you could pay your bills, you could just not.
I hope I will be more self-confident. Maybe more conscious of what I'm saying with my words, so maybe a bit more thought through and not as... When you're young, I feel like we're quite unfiltered and you just say what you think, but hopefully I'll gain a bit of a filter as the years go on.
And it'd be fun because I can have a family, even though kids are, like, annoying.
And then bring them up in Christ, you know? Inspire the next generation.
Of course, yeah.
I think it's people who assume that we're middle-aged. Physically, definitely feel achier and creakier.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
I mean, some middle-aged people, older people, they can be quite stubborn, quite arrogant, and they've lived longer. They feel like they deserve respect, you know what I mean? They don't really realise that respect, even at that age, is earned. If you want the younger generation to respect you, then you have to earn their respect.
I have found I've just had back pain recently that is aggravated by going to sleep. So I suspect that probably comes with being middle-aged as well.
Probably feeling your body getting a bit older. In my head, I still feel like I'm 18 and ready to party all night. And my body's sort of saying, no, you're not quite. 12 o'clock, you need to go to bed.
Maybe just like energy levels, maybe things get more tricky and grandparenting and things. You've got to like a new phase and you've got to navigate new challenges and a different season. Yeah.
Well, you have bills to pay and things.
I think you have bills. Yeah.
You have to be responsible all the time and that's stressful. Yeah, I think work is going to be quite plain when it's like full time. Yeah. It's going to be quite boring because I think you just get quite frail. I can't lie.
I think the Bastable family gets the prize for giving the best comment and the worst comment. Thank you so much for telling us middle-aged people we are frail. That's sobering, isn't it? Very sobering. But okay, everybody's entitled to their own perceptions. What I did notice talking to people over the last few weeks is that actually quite a reluctance to admit to the label middle age, and actually quite a reluctance at the end of middle age to accept a label of old. And that might say something about the negative perceptions that we have of some of the seasons of life. I don't know. It might be we don't want to be labeled by other people with negative perceptions and put in a box. I don't think any of us want to be just pigeonholed or written off because of our age, do we? And many of us do actually have questions or are quite apprehensive about middle age before we get there. And unfortunately, some of those worries have been reinforced. There's an idea out there, and if you go on the internet and you put this into images, you'll get loads of graphs showing the U-curve of happiness. Has anybody heard of the U-curve of happiness? Okay, there was an article that was published about 2010, and since then the idea has gained quite a lot of currency. The idea is that you're sort of quite happy in your late 20s, early 30s, but then happiness starts dipping, reaching its lowest point in your 40s and 50s, and then starting to rise again, you get happier again, in your 60s and 70s, apparently. But did you notice on the video, quite a few people were saying, actually, there's some really good things about being middle-aged in this middle season of life. And actually, that's my experience for the most part. Some researchers now cast doubt on this U-curve, and they take a different approach. They say, actually, happiness levels depend much less on just pure age, but more on factors like gender, education, physical health, individual life experiences, like have you been going through a lot of trauma or have you had relationship issues, as well as like the wider society context, economic downturns or war or natural disasters, that kind of thing. So I believe there is no universal experience of middle age, actually. So that's our first encouragement, actually. Don't believe that you have to be a certain way in middle age. Okay. Having said that, there are undoubtedly some pressures that it's very common to face in the middle portion of your life. There's a term out there called the squeezed middle. And that's a financial term for those people who find themselves with an income that's not great enough for them to feel comfortable, but actually not low enough to require extra help from the state. So people are struggling a little bit. But I think even if your career has taken off, say, and you're quite earning a lot more, there is a bit of a squeeze in midlife, which is not always financial. It's about feeling that responsibility is kind of piling up on every side of you. If you're married and you happen to have children, then your kids will be growing up, but quite often they still need you quite a lot, and they're often still financially dependent on you living at home. Anybody know the average age at which young people leave home in the last 21, 20? No, the average age actually is 24, believe it or not, in the last census. But I think that's an average, of course. Remember, there's all sorts of things that can affect averages. Average age of marriage, anybody can take a guess? 31, yes, that's correct, 31. So quite often you've still got children around at home, a bit dependent on you, but in later middle age, you might be also looking after grandchildren, as well as having quite a lot of input into your children's lives. And at the same time, you might be looking after parents who are needing more support. And that is a feeling like you're looking after everybody sometimes. And so time does become an issue for many of us in midlife. Would anybody relate to that? Struggling to try and juggle all our family and work commitments, also trying to stay healthy, be a healthy lifestyle, eat well when you haven't got much time to cook and all of that, and trying to keep up some friendships and a bit of time to ourselves so we don't go crazy. As Christians, we also want to prioritize our relationship with God, and we're trying to maybe serve at church or in other ways, and also trying to kind of engage with our community, not just be obsessed with church. So it's a challenge to pay attention to all those areas of life, isn't it? Quite a challenge. Some of the problems, I think, of midlife very often stem from the fact that we neglect some of these areas and don't realize until too late it's causing some issues. Or sometimes maybe trying too hard to do it all perfectly. That's the other one, isn't it? I think identity is another issue for those of us in midlife, because if we've thrown ourselves fully into work or into child rearing, and those things either come to an end with redundancy or kids leaving home, the empty nest and all of that, we can start to question who we are. What is our identity? What is our worth? That has to change a little as we get older, doesn't it? Marriages can come under strain if we suddenly realise we've been so busy with other things that we're actually becoming strangers under the same roof. And identity changes as well as our position in the family changes. So this picture here, this is from quite a few years ago, but this is four generations of our family. There's me sitting between my mum and my grandma, and then my two boys when they were quite a bit younger. Four generations of the Richmond family. And then I was one of the younger ones, obviously, in the family. At the beginning of midlife, Mark and I, my husband and I, we still had a grandma each, and we both had both our parents. At this stage, getting later in midlife, those are all gone. We have no grandmas, we have no parents. So thankfully, I believe they've all gone to be with the Lord, but that is a lot of loss. Loss has to be faced in middle age. It's where you probably, for most people, often come face to face with it in a really personal, close way. And on top of all of that, if that was not enough, there are chemical and biological changes that we have to deal with. For men, you get off slightly easier. You have a very slow decrease in testosterone, on average about 1% a year that tails off. But for women, whoa! There's the menopause to navigate, isn't there? And these experiences of menopause, I think they vary a lot between women. I've got one relative who sailed through it, barely noticed it. My mum was quite badly affected by it emotionally. I was somewhere in the middle. But the key, I think, to navigating it is to be aware of what's going on with our body and with our emotions, cutting people a little bit of slack if they seem to be behaving a bit more out of character than they used to, and going to get help when if you need it. Some women don't need any help during menopause. Some women really do, and thank goodness there is more help out there. But if there was one thing I was going to say to men dealing with women of a certain age, I would say this might be slightly more uncomfortable for you as a phase of life, but for your wife, your sister, your mum, your colleague, it could actually be quite debilitating and quite bewildering. I know that for me, I hated the fact that, you know, I've always been quite a calm, even-tempered person, and during menopause, I had mood swings and I did have, shall we say, heightened reactions to events. But I didn't feel like me. You know, that is a really strange feeling. And women have to deal with that. So please don't just belittle it or make fun of it unless the women in your life are initiating the use of humour as their way of navigating it. And that's fine. The men in our office have had quite an education because there are four women of a certain age who have not held back talking about menopause, which is good. I think it's good. I think it's good to encourage us all to talk about these things. So given all those pressures, I mean, that might sound quite bad. if I was going to give a piece of advice to people who are not yet at midlife, and perhaps you're worried about it, what I would say is, even now, start investing time that you don't think you have in taking a step back from the busyness of life with God. Protect a little bit of time every day to spend with Him, to meditate on Him, His awesomeness, His love, His constancy, whatever you were going through. Read His word so that you can live by His wisdom. Pray, give Him every circumstance that is weighing on your mind. Take yourself off on a Christian retreat or just on a country walk, even if you think it is impossible to get that time. Make that time. And get other people to help you make that time. As a fellowship, as a body, as a family, we ought to be looking after each other, one another, in really practical ways. And if there is a single mum who just hasn't got no time, we should be stepping up to help her get that space. Or a single dad. Or just somebody who's got a really hectic life with commitments they cannot put down. Take them up for them for a little while. Let them get away and get that time with God. Let them step off the escalator. We even did a series here during COVID, actually, called The Wellbeing Journey, which was really helpful. It split life up into six areas: the emotional life, physical, vocational, relational, financial, and spiritual. And it's a really good idea to go back and revisit those things. For those of us who are on Right Now Media in the church, it's on Right Now Media. You can just go back. You don't have to do the whole course with the whole group. Just go back, spend some time with God, and think about those areas of your life. What is being neglected? What is driving you into the ground? Where does there need to be a bit more balance? What do you need to invest in? It's a really important thing to do. And it's important to then act on what God says to you. This is something I'm not always great at. I sometimes hear God and I go, oh, yeah, yeah, I'll do that. And then I don't follow through. But we don't want to be those people who look into a mirror and then walk away and forget what we've seen, like it says in the book of James, do we? That's not helping anybody. And let's get other people to support us. Let's get our close friends praying for us. Let's ask them to make us accountable for doing the things we've said we want to do, and for actually paying attention to the things which are just getting out of kilter before they get out of control. Let's follow Jesus' example. Very often the times he went off on his own were the times when life was busiest, when the crowds were really trying to push their agenda on him, when everybody had an opinion about what he should be doing, or when he had important decisions to make, or he knew there was something coming up which was going to be really awful, and that it was God's will for him to go through it, not around it. That's when he carved out the time. He took himself off to pray and center his life once again on the Father's priorities for him. Jesus knew, it always gets me, he knew that he would only have a short time in his human life. He had 3 years of ministry. That feels like nothing, doesn't it? But he also knew that time is not the measure of an effective life for God. It's how central God is to that life and how surrendered we are to him. And you cannot stay like that if you're not going to invest time in spending it with him. Having said all of that, the joys of life can be very many and very joyful. Some of the greatest joys in my life are actually in this building right now. My younger son and my lovely daughter-in-law are here with my three grandchildren. And as I look out here, I see people who've inspired me and humbled me. And I've known some of you for 30 years, and you're my family. You are my family. There's great joy when you get to midlife of having friendships that have lasted 10, 20, 30 years. It's incredible. And it's a great joy seeing your family grow and reach their potential. And when you commit to God's family, you become part of a community which has love at its core and a greater purpose than any other kind of community. How blessed are we in midlife? The other potentially wonderful thing about midlife, and it's not a given, is that you still, as Lee said on the video, is that you still have energy, but you also have a measure of maturity, experience, and wisdom to make that energy count. Wasn't it wonderful to hear those passionate testimonies from the young people this morning? Amazing. Do any of us remember a time when we went to a youth festival and God really touched our lives and it was incredible? It's brilliant. Well, young people, if you continue to give your life to God's purposes and seek him out, you will find and develop your spiritual gifts. You'll get to understand who God has made you to be. You'll find your place in his project to save the world. You'll become more at ease with yourself. You'll understand other people better. And you will be able to have a transforming influence on those around you. Midlife is a time of some things coming to fruition. And it's wonderful. Although sometimes I feel as if I'm still only just getting started. I'd like to finish off by perhaps bringing out a few lessons from the life of a man most of us have heard of, actually. This man, he learned to stick up for himself at quite a young age in his family because he was the youngest of eight brothers. You can imagine the bullying that went on there, can't you? And as a teenager, he seemed to be absolutely fearless. He was the whole package, actually, quite good looking, physically strong, but the sensitive type too. And God had made him promises of a great future. In his early 20s, he actually even became quite well known, quite admired. But then it all came crashing down. He got into conflict with somebody very powerful and had to go on the run for quite a few years. By the time that all of that was resolved and he saw the promises that God had made him as a young man fulfilled, his youth was over and he was 37 years old. Has anybody guessed who I'm talking about? King David in the Bible. Became king of part of Israel for 30, then there was, at the age of 30, then there was more conflict before he became king of all of Israel. And even in the early part of his rule, when he was king over all of Israel, he had to overcome external threats to his country. There were powerful enemies around him. It was only by his mid-40s that he was actually secure. There was peace. He had a group of trusted friends who'd gone through the worst of times and now were in the best of times. He'd learned wisdom and how to rule with justice and kindness. His reputation was huge. And then, probably around the age of 47, this. David dispatched Joab and his fighting men of Israel in full force to destroy the Ammonites for good. They laid siege to Rabbah, but David stayed in Jerusalem. And one late afternoon, David got up from taking his nap. There's middle age for you again. And he was strolling on the roof of the palace. From his vantage point on the roof, he saw a woman bathing. The woman was stunningly beautiful. David sent to ask about her and was told, isn't this Bathsheba, daughter of Eliam and wife of Uriah the Hittite? David sent his agents to get her. After she arrived, he went to bed with her. And this occurred during the time of purification following her period. Then she returned home. And before long, she realized she was pregnant. Later, she sent word to David, I'm pregnant. David then got in touch with Joab, his right-hand man in the army. Send Uriah the Hittite to me. Joab sent him. And when he arrived, David asked him for news of the front, how things were going with Joab and the troops and with the fighting. And then he said to Uriah, go home, have a refreshing bath and a good night's rest. Subtext and a bit of nookie with your wife. After Uriah left the palace, an informant of the king was sent after him. But Uriah didn't go home. He slept that night at the palace entrance along with the king's servants. David was told that Uriah had not gone home, and he asked Uriah, didn't you just come off a hard trip? So why didn't you go home? Uriah replied to David, the ark of the Lord is out there with the fighting men of Israel and Judah in tents. My master Joab and his servants are roughing it out in the fields. So how can I go home and eat and drink and enjoy my wife? On your life, I'll not do it. All right, said David, have it your way. Stay for the day and I'll send you back tomorrow. So Uriah stayed in Jerusalem the rest of the day. The next day, David invited him to eat and drink with him, and David got him drunk. But in the evening, Uriah again went out and slept with his master's servants. He didn't go home. In the morning, David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it with Uriah. In the letter, he wrote, put Uriah in the front lines where the fighting is the fiercest. Then pull back and leave him exposed so that he's sure to be killed. This is the first hint of anything bad that David is doing. And it is a biggie. Where does it come from? It seems to come out of the blue in midlife. How many people have we heard of, like people who are respected even in the Christian world, and all of a sudden you hear, oh, this has happened. And everybody goes, what? Them? I think this story of David highlights some of the temptations of old age. Firstly, a sense of entitlement. He'd had a hard couple of decades hiding for his life, running for his life, then trying to secure the throne, all for God. Surely he deserved a season off military campaigning for a bit, take it a bit easy. God had blessed him abundantly, but David felt he deserved this thing that he wanted. Why should she be off limits? Why shouldn't he have what he wanted after all his hard work? Secondly, taking his eyes off God. After all those years of seeking God when he needed God's help, once David was comfortable and secure, he started going after other kinds of desires. In 1 John 2, it says, don't love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, love for the Father is not in them. For everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life comes not from the Father, but from the world. The world and its desires pass away, but whoever does the will of the Lord lives forever. Powerful leaders often have an Achilles heel of some sort, don't they? And David, the passionate man, was led astray by those passions when they were not brought under God's will. And finally, pride. When he messed up, David had a reputation to lose in middle age. When he was young, he had nothing to lose. Send me out to fight Goliath. I'll fight a giant. Yeah. In middle age, it was going to cost him quite a lot in terms of reputation to admit his fault. He'd got an image. And when you've got a lot more to lose, you'll do what it takes to protect it, even if that means lying and stepping over other people. Sometimes you get so torn up inside and with the lies that it ruins your health. So these are the temptations of middle age. There are challenges, there are joys, and there are temptations. Many a Christian has fallen prey to those temptations, either spectacularly and in public, or slowly and very subtly. But the good news is that although there are always consequences for our behavior, there is always a way back. David was a man after God's own heart, not because he was perfect, but because when he was confronted with his sin by Nathan the prophet, he immediately said, "I have sinned." And he threw himself on God's mercy. He did not have the throne taken off him. There were still things for him to do. And when he wrote his poem, his great Psalm 51, about this episode in his life, he said, "Have mercy on me, O God, according to your unfailing love. Not because of all I've done for you in the past, but because you're a God of love. According to your great compassion, blot out my transgressions. Wash away all my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. Create in me a pure heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. Do not cast me from your presence or take your Holy Spirit from me. Restore to me the joy of your salvation and grant me a willing spirit to sustain me." And I think this is where this sermon applies to all of us. At every stage of life, at any stage of life. If we seek the Lord with all our heart, if we're willing to acknowledge where we're going astray, if we're willing to lay ourselves before God and say, "I'm sorry I've become too comfortable. I'm sorry that I felt I deserve things. I'm sorry that I've settled for second best. I'm sorry for grasping at all the things the world is telling me I need when I don't really need them," then he will forgive us. He'll cleanse us. He'll renew us. He'll renew that passion within us. And we can move forward. So if you feel God is saying anything to you today along these lines, then just talk to him about it. If you feel you need help with putting something right in your life that you don't have the strength to do it on your own, get some friends alongside you to help you. The church is not to be a place where we judge one another, but where we bear one another's burdens. And come back to the Lord who loves you and who's got great plans for you. And know that life abundant that we talked about earlier. Amen.